Hello, welcome to another episode of Data Exposed. Happy to be here, and we're specifically happy to talk about a topic that's been kind of hot lately with the new database, SQL database tiers and things like that. But first, let me introduce my guest. Sean, why don't you introduce yourself real quick?
Hi, I'm Sean Tinlan-Jones. I'm with the Azure CAT team, and we focus on complex implementations. And one of the things I've been focusing on of late is custom sharding, elastically scaling the database tier back and forth.
Right? Yeah, and this is a kind of interesting topic because with the new announcement of the SQL database tiers, right, we can get predictable performance and things like that, but that really doesn't solve the problem of elastic scale, right? We may hit the threshold of a database size, but how do we get performance and how do we scale out, scale back in, right? The elasticity that really what Azure's all about, right?
Yeah. In fact, what we're looking for is the ability, when we say elastic, we tend to think, oh, it's in one direction, out or in. Yeah. But in fact, elasticity is out, in, up, down. Yeah. And now with these performance services that we've recently got, these SKUs that we have, we can do that up and down with relative ease. There's still a big challenge about how you do it out and in.
Yeah, yes. So when you think about elasticity, right, like you say, a lot of people think about just scaling out, but if you think about it in terms of like a rubber band, right?
Yeah.
Rubber band goes out and then back in, right? And that's what elasticity really is.
Yeah.
We tried this early on with SQL Federation, and it really was the challenge, right? And we're going to talk about some of the challenges with sharding, right?
That's good.
But really, Federation just didn't quite cut it. There were some challenges around like fan-out queries and keys and things, you know, primary keys, things like that, or identities, things like that, right? So we really need to solve some of these complexities of sharding, of scale, of the elasticity.
Sure. Right? So what we found when we were working with customers, and that's what our team really does, is work with customers and bring that back into engineering, right?
Yep.
So it's a great sort of intro into the slide, is what we were looking for that we weren't necessarily feeling in the past that we were getting when our customers engaged us was the scaling elastically, right, up and out, but also the splitting and merging. You could previously split, but you couldn't necessarily merge the data in. So we had some customers who split to 60 shards. Oh, I don't know how to merge them back in. Yeah. So that's the stuff we kind of addressed, right?
Yep.
And then what we're trying to do is get some, how do you move DDL out, the data definition languages, right? How do you get that schema out there and propagate it? If you're talking about, we've got some customers out there with over 15,000 shards, databases. Some of them are looking for over 100,000, right?
Yeah. Okay,
those are interesting
rare
patterns.
Right.
And there's a reason why that happens. It shouldn't happen, but there's reasons why that happens. And then there's reference data. So it's a relational database, so there's still joins and there's still lookup tables. How do you get that to all the shards, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So those things.
And how do I apply an alter to all the shards, right? I want to add a column to a table. How do I get that to?
And not just the alter of the table, but also the data within the table in some cases. And then lastly, database provisioning. If I've got to deploy 15,000 databases,
How do
I'm not
do
doing
that
through SSMS.
Right. Yeah, that's a challenge,
you've got a challenge there. So these are the kind of things that we were looking at. How do we provide a pattern that customers can use?
Mm-hmm.
And then how do we take those learnings from working with customers and make it available to the broader community?
Right.
And that's really the kind of work that we've been doing of late, is creating a pattern and a sample.
And you actually have customers using these patterns and principles right now.
That's correct. So what they'll do is they'll take this, they'll look at it and get the ideas, get the principles out of that, and then do their own custom sharding.
Right.
They may take a copy and paste of it, but it's their business and then how they're doing, which is quite different from federations or necessarily anything that's coming up. Yeah, is that that's a fully supported product.
Right.
Whereas this is about
sampling. And so what we're talking about here is just kind of patterns and principles for if you want to implement custom sharding.
That is correct.
Right. And this is a great way to, so what we're going to talk about here is something that we've you worked on for quite a while.
That is correct, for a long
perfect.
While. So, you know, to really fully understand what we've been doing, we put this diagram together and it just highlights some concepts. So you'll see some keywords getting thrown up as we're talking, maybe going through the demo.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll go, what does he mean by a shardlet? You know, what does he mean by a shard, right?
Sure.
So oftentimes we say a shard is a database.
Mm-hmm.
That becomes more of an implementation thing. Actually, a shard is a collection of records, and those records are oftentimes grouped by, one might say, a tenant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one might say, oh, by a customer. But that grouping is a shardlet. So within a shard, you have the little shardlet.
Yep.
And that shardlet is the customer, if you will, right?
Or could be product.
Could be product.
Right.
Anything that groups data, yep. right? Okay. And can be isolated. So I can then take that shardlet and move it from one shard to another shard.
Yep.
By whatever algorithm I want to do. Or if I want to do that manually, right?
Yep.
So what we do here is we say, oh, okay, if I can get my mouse there, there he is. So what we're doing here is that's the shardlet. So this here is related data. So this is a customer table and there's the customer's orders. That's a shardlet, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But all of that together is actually sitting in this green bubble, in this green rectangle, that would be the shard.
Yep.
So, and then what happens is because a shard is a table that can be sharded, right? So
yep.
this is what we talk about, a shard table. In this particular case, customer and order is actually a shard table.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That can go across multiple databases, and then we start calling them shard set. Okay. Theoretically, you can actually have this shard in the same database. But you don't really want to do that theoretically. You don't want to do that in an implementation.
Right.
So, you know,
we want to get that deep right
that's
now.
That's academic, yes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that's correct. So there's, and then the other thing is that you have to think about, like they call this a reference table.
Table.
You can't shard it. There's no customer yet.
Right.
So you can't shard it.
So a reference, so these are kind of key concepts that as we go through the demo that you kind of want to keep in mind, right? As we start talking about these concepts, right? These keywords. So a reference table would be something that's fairly static, like zip code state that doesn't change, but we get replicated to every shard.
I really am pleased that you say it like that, right? Because that's the first place people go to. It's countries. It's pretty static, right?
Yep.
However, we take a scenario within AdventureWorks and we say, okay, you do currency rates. For the day, that is actually quite static. But in the evening, you get new currency rates.
Yep.
But I need that on every single one of my shards, right?
Yes.
Within the shard set, yeah, okay? In that particular shard set, okay?
Right, so this is a table that's referenced in every single...
Every single
but
shard.
But not included in the...
it's not a shard table.
It's not a shard table. But like you say, it might be a currency table that we need to update every evening, and we need to get that data to every shard.
Every shard. Right. So what we do is we say that a good reference table is either ideally small and non-volatile.
Yep.
But you can have, the business model might be one that says it is volatile, but it's narrow as well. Might be volatile, might be large, right?
Yep.
But the patterns we show today actually overcome that need. But if it's going to be something that gets updated every second,
mm-hmm.
You have to review your data model, and maybe sharding is not the way to do it. And maybe a relational database management system isn't the solution for you. And
right.
that's the thing
to keep
in mind.
Look at other options like Azure Storage or something.
Yeah.
So this is good. This is a good foundation for understanding kind of the demo we're going to look at and the components of sharding, right, of Elastic Scale, right?
Yeah.
You've got your shard tables, your shards, your shardlets, and then importantly, the key, right? What are you going to partition on?
Very good.
Customer ID, product ID, what's that one? Because I think a lot of people overlook this. What's that one key that
it's not so much that they necessarily overlook it as much as they say, oh, it's easy, right?
Yeah.
But when you get into the details, which we won't get a lot into the details now, I just want to highlight that is something you must be don't underestimate
cognizant
it.
Cognizant about.
Very cognizant about
yep.
it. So a sharding key is very easy for somebody to say, it's a customer, it's a region. But we have a pattern, which we won't go into here, but it's a pattern that we've seen. It's a more of the sort of like out there pattern where we might say that the thing that I need to shard is really volatile and busy and that, and it's actually a sales order. So think about that for a second. If I've got tens of thousands of customers or 100,000 customers, well, I can kind of digest that. When I've got a million orders, how does that work, right?
Yeah.
But the pattern allows for it,
yeah.
Which is why we don't call this shardlet a tenant. We call it a shardlet,
right?
Because tenant is a business concept that a lot of solutions apply to customer, region, right?
Products,
all that
sales,
kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but we are talking about the ability to distribute the load and partition and isolate the sets of data, and it could be a sales order.
Yep.
It could be
excellent.
So we call it a shardlet.
Perfect. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So that brings us to this next part, right?
Yep. So, and this is if you've tried custom sharding on your own,
yes,
you probably hit probably each one of these points and you know, bang your head against the wall on many of these points, right? The difficulties and challenges of implementing Elasticscale.
Yeah. What I found when working with customers is that they typically come and say, okay, this is our challenge. Well, they'll do it a shard map, right? Yep. They'll say, that's our challenge, right? Or they'll say, the moving of data is our challenge, right? And then they'll do this design and they'll do this for a couple of weeks. You know, it's agile, it's sprints, let's do the feature. Oh, wow. You know, I didn't really think about the shard placement thing. I didn't really think about elasticity. How am I fixing that, right? And elasticity is about merging and splitting, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
So
yeah.
Think about some of the previous releases out there. You kind of go, oh, we left that for later thinking we could solve it. But truthfully, we needed to architect it from up front, yeah. Right? So this pattern is about bringing those customer experiences and challenges and saying, making you aware of them. Maybe you find your own way of dealing with it.
Yep.
But we've also got some samples about how other people have done it, and we put it into a package and with documents.
And this list comes from all the work you've done at customers and implemented into this the sample, into these patterns and practices, to say, here's the things that we've run into as far as challenges, and we're going to help you solve some of these, right?
Yes. And one of the great things about this as we work on the samples is that we actually feed that back into the engineering team.
Yes.
And there's a team that's been focusing on how do we make this something that can actually be supported and productionalized, if you will.
Yep.
And that's, it's not just going out to the community. It's not just for the viewers that are reading this, but also back into our engineer, excuse me.
Into the engineering team.
I need to think twice about having that for one of these. But back to the engineering team, and they take these lessons learned and they work with that.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, perfect. Okay. Yeah, so these are a lot of the challenges, even as we go out and talk about these, they're like, ran into that, and so.
We are producing a document on this. In fact, this right now is under review. Mm-hmm. So each one of these is actually discussed in greater detail in the document, right? We're just not going to discuss them right now between you and I,
right?
Sure.
And once that's reviewed, we will make that publicly available.
Yes.
We're not going to say when, because it's still under review, but that will be publicly available at some point.
Right? Yes, yeah, near future.
Right, near future. Wonderful. Okay.
Okay. So, you know, from this point, we can get closer to the demo point.
Okay.
But what I wanted to highlight here was that it is made up of libraries.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. And essentially what happens is you've got this kind of core library that's at the top here, right?
Okay.
And it says, if you're going to do sharding, you need to implement these interfaces.
Right.
Okay. And there are some architects out there who believe custom sharding for SQL Azure, for instance, must only be done through the entire SQL Azure platform.
Right.
Okay. So how I
get my
connection.
Contained within the database, right?
Contained within the databases or database. Well,
yep.
There's obviously multiple databases.
Sure.
But some of the configuration, the settings, all of that must be inside the database platform. Understand, all of this can be done on-premise as well. This is not just Azure specific SQL Azure sharding, right?
Right.
It is relational database management sharding, and yes, geared towards SQL Server. I haven't tried to get any of the alternative technologies out there. However, we've implemented some of the interfaces on Azure, SQL Azure, right?
Yep.
You could. It says SQL Azure. It's a bit of a misnomer because you could actually do it on premise, right?
Yep.
But this code base would be: I'm implementing some of these interfaces using SQL Azure, right? I'm implementing some of these interfaces using the table store,
okay?
So customers can extend this so that everything gets done in SQL Azure. We just feel with the pattern that we've got that some of the patterns code is actually better served in the table store.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And then this last section is a little bit out of place there, right? You kind of, well, what is he doing there? That's an area where, let's say, for instance, you want to do database provisioning.
Yeah.
I'm a great fan of SSDT, SQL Server Data Tools, and DACPACS.
Yep.
So,
great technology.
So what I do is I put it inside the contrib because there's other organizations that want to do deployment of their databases using scripts.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, they will do their database provisioning using scripts. This is a ready-made, how do you use SSDT? We fill in the gaps where SSDT didn't meet all the needs that we had. So that's what it's for.
So it sort of provides the flexibility if I want to do it in the cloud or from a relational, sort of non-relational, and how do I deploy
Correct.
What about deploy mechanisms?
So I'll give you an idea of one of these things. We could add another one here, where, because this is where we do shardlet management, right? So what we do is, if you try and connect to a shardlet, but we're currently moving that shardlet from one shard to the other, we need to know which connections are there. So we store that there. Maybe what we do is we actually store that in a NoSQL database, like maybe an HBase is one that comes to mind, right?
Okay.
Then we would have an HBase on this side to do your connection management, to do your shardlet lookups. Maybe we use a different store to keep the shardlet management. Where am I, all my, you should be able to say, oh, I'm clicking on the shardlet. Where does he reside? Oh, he resides in that shard, that lookup. Yes, it's a cache layer, but it's got to be persisted somewhere.
Right. Okay.
We persist it there at the moment.
Okay.
Okay. Lastly, the city hash. All it is it's really isolated because I'm trying to avoid getting too much detail there, but basically what happens is we distribute the data, and city hash is a great algorithm for taking a string and converting that into a unique value without the overhead of encryption. So it's not an MD5 or SHA or anything like that. We can turn a string into an integer, or a big integer, very efficiently.
Right.
And the pattern we use is very much reliant on an integer.
Okay.
But we want people to be able to give us any
type of value.
Any type of value, long as it's string.
Yep.
If you get my meaning, convert it string, and that that will go there.
Okay, perfect.
Okay. Right. Sure. Can get pretty technical, so trying to cut
it short. We'll leave it at that. We'll come back and we'll maybe another time go deeper into that.
And then the last thing, because this is, remember I said to you, we implemented the metadata in the SQL Azure?
Yes. Yep.
So we've created a data model that. This is the metadata for the storing the settings and storing the configuration information, right?
Right. How many shards do I have?
What's the shard map look like? And we use the schema called data elasticity. And because we use SSDT, what we're able to do is you can say, I'm going to put this schema in my root database of my own solution, or I can have it separate as a separate database.
Okay. Perfect.
So some really nice things that we get out of using DACPACS and SSDT.
Yeah, excellent. And this is important because really just from the elasticity standpoint, right, we need to know and store some of this metadata settings is, you know, how many shards do I need, can I scale up to, what's my minimum charge, how many tenants per shard can I hit before I need to scale up to another shard, things like that, right? We need to store that information.
Correct. So what we have, the pattern allows for this is that you should be able to say that when I hit a DTU, now we've got these new performance levels, right?
Excellent example, right?
Right? Yep. I hit DTU, I should be able to generate a new shard, the database gets provisioned, my reference data gets propagated out, and my new records should immediately start hitting that shard.
Yep.
Okay? Even though I'm still moving other shardlets from this side into the new shard there.
Yep.
It means to be immediately available, right?
Yep.
So we do that. But that's just DTU, that's just performance. But there are businesses out there who want to say, no, I don't want to store more than 10% of my business in a single shard.
Right.
So it's got nothing to do with performance. It's got to do with exposure to downtime, exposure to an unavailable database.
Yeah. High uptime, high availability.
That kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
So in those cases, when you do your algorithm of saying, when should I create a new shard? You can do it actually on a business rule and not only a performance metric.
Perfect. Okay. Well, so with that, I think we're all excited. Let's look out and look some of the, let's walk through a demo, right? If that's all right.
Yes.
We're not going to get, in this demo, we probably won't get too deep. We'll look at some code. We'll save that for another time. But the whole purpose of this demo is to give you an idea of how this works, right?
Yes.
So let's jump out and look at some code here.
Okay, so what's happened here is I have not got that onto that screen, so let me just move it over. That means that this is extended. Okay.
Perfect, okay.
Not extended, just different screen. Okay, yeah, it is extended, not duplicated. So what we've done is we show the demo through using the test tools. We've created a example, off AdventureWorks 2012 OLTP database.
Okay.
Not the light version, okay?
This is the full AdventureWorks
story, right? So just to give you an idea what that means, if anybody's unfamiliar with it, and I've been playing with this today, so in preparation, and this is what I mean, right? Is let me just do that so I can clear away the distraction. What this means is that we actually have all those tables.
Yep.
Now, that meant we had to go to AdventureWorks and shard it. Right? We had to create a sharding model. Not all the tables are here. Why are not all the tables here, right? It's because we've sharded tables. A sharded table doesn't need to belong in this main table. We've decided to create a root table, and we do that for the reference data. Remember I said to the data elasticity?
Yep, so these are your metadata tables.
That's right, all of them that's got the term data elasticity on them right there, right? Okay, so that's a fully fledged sample. This is not a trivial database. In the past, we've used examples where you go, here's a user profile table, and here's the follow-in and follower table. Oh, that's it. You know, now you can do sharding.
Right.
You know, really trivial data type, right? Right. In fact, why are you using relational? Go to another NoSQL store,
right?
Yeah? People have been using AdventureWorks.
A staple database they've known, it's been around for a long time, right? So they're familiar with that.
There we go. Okay, so now that was just to show that. Then, so what we're going to do is, we're not going to go and step into each one of these things. Unless you want to, right? Create the initial shard environment. So at this point, all we're going to do is create settings. So if we went into this query, I'm going to hop screen again, and we said, let me do this because, and I can't see it on my monitor, so I'm not looking back into the cameras there, but let's get the settings here, right? Boom, nothing there,
Right.
Let's talk about configurations. There is nothing there.
Okay.
Okay, so we're now just going to initialize our shard.
So we're starting from, we've got a plain database. We want to start implementing and creating the settings, the metadata information, right?
Okay, so there we go. And what those settings will do is this one will, we're just going to run the test here, right? Okay. What he's doing in the background is he's actually saying, tell me who my main user is. Tell me who my, no databases are getting created at this point.
Right.
Okay, no databases. Have we created the shards? We haven't even created the arranged shard yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we just need to give it some time, yeah? What's happening here? Boom, look at that. Two databases are in creation. What's happening in the background is I've got worker roles.
Mm-hmm.
So I've put these data DAC packs onto the queue.
Right.
And they're getting picked off by the worker roles. You could have as many worker roles as you wanted to. So let's say you've got 100 databases that need to be sharded or created shards. You would actually generate, you would say, I want to do that quickly. Okay, put up seven worker roles. Or put up 50 worker roles. Do what you want to there. This will just deploy it.
So let's back up and talk about the components that are being used to create this. So we're talking about, there's worker roles out there. We're using Azure Tables to store information.
Yes.
So what, obviously, you know, SQL database. So what are the full components and what are they being used for?
So we're also using the Blob Store.
Okay.
And what we're using the Blob Store is for that contrib section where we put in the DAC packs in there.
Okay.
So the DAC pack is in there and we stream that DAC pack over.
Okay.
And to the worker role, and then that worker role says, I'm going to go and pick up something from the queue, apply the DAC pack to that server that's holding that's going to hold the databases. Goes to the queue, picks up again, uses the same DAC pack and applies it. So the same DAC pack gets applied.
Yep. So just to be clear, the DAC pack is used for what?
Right. Moving the DDL. The DDL, the schema of the database.
So basically we're taking a copy of that, we'll call it the original database, right?
So it's not a copy of AW main.
Okay.
It's a DAC pack that has just been generated for the shard. Our shard is called AW sales.
Yep.
So it's just taking all the sales table, all the sharded tables, all the reference tables, and the schema of those guys and deploying them to each one of the databases.
It contains the schema that you want every shard to contain, in summary, right?
Yes, purely.
That's purely. All right,
and we create users on there so that it's ready to start receiving connections.
And so at that point, you when you execute this, it throws that puts that DAC pack in blob storage, right?
Yeah. When you initialize, what you did was you deployed to the DAC pack to blob storage. You initialize. You created your root database. You're in a ready state now, right?
Yep.
And now when I push that button to initialize all the shards, it created the, it put on the queue.
Yep.
Okay, these are tables because we do a copy of the queue because this now becomes your audit, your log about what happened. So it tells you this time, this catalog,
Now, just to be clear, we are looking at Azure storage tables.
Yes, that's correct.
Right, right. Yes. This is, yeah, right.
You so could have implemented this on SQL. We
right.
haven't.
Okay. So, right, because we talked about, just so there's no confusion, right, because yeah. we looked at the metadata, you know, in SQL database the table, right, tables, but now we're looking at Azure tables. Just don't want any confusion as yeah. to, you know, what we're looking at here.
Yes. This, yeah, okay. it's keeping the history of what we've done.
What
we've done. The configuration yeah. table actually contains the relationships and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
Okay.
You'll notice here we created five databases. Those five databases are arranged. So what happens is I'm customer one. We do a calculation, say, oh, which shard should you belong to? Oh, I'm going to put you on shard one or five, whatever it is,
yep.
by the algorithm. Customer two comes along, same story. I put him in there, right?
Right.
But you see this shard here. That mm-hmm. shard there is what we call a pointer shard or most important person shard, right?
Yeah.
And what it means is that I can take customer A who really needs to be on this premium SKU database and I can force him to go to this high volume database. So
okay.
this sharding is not just range. So many times you get into a custom sharding solution and customers will go and they've deployed, oh look, and I can deploy these 10 databases and all my customers will be distributed about that. Okay, how do you get your most important person to be on the shard that's not got noisy neighbors? We split the range and we isolate the person. Our pattern doesn't do that. What we do is we say, you tell us which shard you want to go to for that person and we send him there. So if you don't tell us where he's going, we'll put him in one of those ones.
Right.
Right? And that okay. mechanism is in the pattern.
Right. So this would be like an MVP type of, all MVPs go to this special
yes.
right, type of.
Correct. Absolutely okay. correct. And what I've seen in one customer scenario is they can actually go and say, I am going to run a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And that set of data needs to be on my premium SKU.
Okay.
So what I do is I push a button and I move my tent and my shardlet from one of these shared environments, push him over to the high volume, and for that period of the campaign, you've now got him in the hot shots, in the MVP shard,
yep.
right?
Yep.
And when your campaign's finished, psh,
move him back.
Put him back inside you, and then you're good, right? So you can fluctuate like that.
Excellent.
And you can automate it because the APIs Excellent. Are there, right?
Okay. All right, so at this stage, we've got all our metadata set, right? Got our tables. So can we go out and look at the databases at this point? Are they there or
so,
no?
Yes, you can look at the database. Remember, so the settings is very simple. They're more global settings. And mm-hmm. all that they do is they say, Superman is the main guy in this solution, right? Mm-hmm. He creates the databases. He creates the logins. He is the DDL guy, right?
Right.
Okay. Batman is the user who can work inside the databases.
Okay.
So he will move reference data across. When customers connect to the shard, they connect. When a shard connects, that's a connection string credentials that he uses.
Perfect.
Right?
Yep.
Okay.
Right.
Data. Really simple, right? The configuration gets a little bit more complex. Remember that diagram I was showing you, the
yeah.
model? Here's all of the tables that are involved in that, right? So when we execute that, the things we can see is that, let me just see if I can pull this up. Do I need to do the font for this or?
No, I think we're good here.
So the way that the sharding works, you can dedicate any server. Any server can serve the shard, right?
Right.
So I could have, even though I'm on the West US, I can create a server on the East US and I can create shards on that. If I want to have three or six servers in the West US, I can create the shards inside. I can spread all my shards across those six logical servers. And you know that you can have 500 databases on a server.
Right.
So just off the bat, I'm telling you now that you can have 3,000 databases without you having to phone Microsoft and go, hey, can I have the 3,000 databases?
Right.
That's not entirely true. You still need to phone them if you want a good experience, right?
Right.
But
the concept there is that I'm not tied to a specific one logical server.
Correct.
I can spread my shards across multiple logical servers.
I've just put one here, and
yep.
it happens to be my server. We can see that AW Sales is my shard
Large.
Set,
yep.
and it's mapped to the current shard one, right?
Yep.
Okay, which is the shard map. And down here, I just need to scroll down there. And yeah, you can see I've got my databases. So database ID one is database name. It's attached to server ID.
Yep.
These are the range shards. So if you don't point it, like remember, yes, database ID six, he's the database for premium speed orders,
right?
That's where we send in our orders. But if you don't point him there, he's going to go.
So for this demo, you said I want 5 shards.
Right? I wanted 5 range shards
and
1 pointer shard.
Right, and at that point it said, okay, here's your range map.
Yes.
Right. You could have said, I want 10 range shards.
Yes.
And here's your range map for
and we're
that,
gonna
right?
do that.
So it automatically did that for you.
And we're going to do that in the demo. It's going to do that. We're going to show how it cleans. This table here is an interesting one.
Okay.
Basically, what we say here is we wanted to create an environment where if you didn't, if you wanted to use DAC pack or you want to use something else, right? Mm-hmm. Well, it may require properties. So we have this essentially property bag. So for this shard set, for this particular configuration, these are how you would provision your databases.
Okay.
And these are the settings that we need in order for us to deploy DAC pack using DAC pack services, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we got a publish XML, we've uploaded that from our database projects.
Perfect. Okay.
Okay. That's what that table there is for.
Excellent.
Very nice. Okay, so where we're at in the demo is
story. Yep, so we've set our shard environment. We've basically created our metadata.
Yes, and at this point, customers can land with their connections and connect.
Okay.
And they can work. What's missing?
Okay.
Let's look at this reference data, right?
Okay.
If my business functions needed reference data to be there, I'm going to demonstrate this currency rate, right? Execute that. Nothing inside shard one.
Okay.
Nothing inside. It's a reference table. Okay. There's nothing about that table that is shardable. There's no customer data.
Now let's refresh our database because we have our databases already created.
You're right.
Correct?
You're right. Let's do that.
So there's our shards.
There's our shards.
Right. And we want to move data from AW main reference
Very
data
good.
To all these other. To
now you said the word move. And because we touch on that later, it's copy.
Copy. Does that move? Right.
We treat AW main as the we treat AW main as the golden copy for reference data. And we treat DAC packs as the golden copy of schema.
Right.
Okay?
Perfect. Yeah. So okay. Sorry. Copy. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So nothing in shard
in shard one. And because I want to do that. Let's do this. Just hold on a second. And let's do that so that can help in. Okay. Comes to master. We're going to go to AW main. Okay.
And this is happening all in SQL database, right? Not locally. This is all in
Azure.
Yep.
All Azure. You can see that it's on that database there.
Okay.
Now that might say, well, you can't run that kind of query in Azure. You can't run that. You can't say that if you are pointed to other than the current database.
Right.
So we've actually done this demo on local boxes. When we do all our dev work, we do it on the local, and then we start applying our tests to the Azure. But because we're using SSDT, even though it's against local.
Yeah.
It's a lovely tool. That's why we like it, right?
Yep.
So the point is nothing's there. So what are we doing in this test now? We are actually going to load. You can imagine this is bringing in the nightly run of currency rates, right?
Yep.
It's currency rates. We're bringing the night, and then we're going to propagate it.
To all the other shards.
To all the other shards, okay? So when this test is done, we should actually see the data there. But because we use queuing, we are going to actually see, data start coming inside here. So what it's actually doing, it's first loading data into the AW main. So we'll go there now. When it's finished here, okay.
There we go. Almost 300 rows.
Yeah, this needs to finish, right?
Yep.
So what we're just BCPing the data in there. This is the first load. Typically, you would put in your rows in the evening or whatever the case may be.
Yep.
And you're populating this into AWN. So what we did was we took AdventureWorks 2012 OLTP database. We've got their data. We emptied that table out to help with this demo. And now we're just BCPing it in to emulate what we would do for nightly refresh of the data. Okay.
Perfect.
I think that's. That's it. Okay, that's 500 rows. So now let's go and have a look if we're propagating our data. Boom. So look what's happening here.
So actually, we could go out to
AW1 and C data,
and in
these last two, there's no data there, right? Okay, so let's go to AW1 here.
You're still in AW1.
I know that, yeah. Okay. I'm just highlighting that because I... There we go, yeah.
Oh, I see what you're doing. Yep.
Okay.
Here we go, 500 rows.
There you go, right? Woo-hoo! So now we're going to do this again, and you'll have to bear with me because I'll have to make one kind of edit. But we're going to put in 5. Hopefully it hasn't done it there yet. Okay. Ah, we didn't beat it. It was already.
Yeah. So I copied it.
So it was already done. So if I refresh now.
It's probably all done.
They're all done, right? So, not fast enough.
No, but that's good because it shows how quick it is to propagate the data.
Yes. So synchronizing of the data, you can choose in the pattern, you can choose that when I'm updating the reference data, do I also want to sync my DDL?
Oh yeah, okay.
Okay.
Right.
And we've chosen, that's why we try and slow it down by synchronizing the DDL, but you can actually just do the reference data, and all that it's doing is it's using special techniques that we've learned. When I say special techniques, they're not secret, but they are applying best practices.
Okay.
We've learned that if you try and put the reference data into, or any data, and we'll see that when we move in Shardlets, straight into the table,
mm-hmm.
the production table.
Yep.
Customers are clunk, like held up, right?
Right.
So what we do is we put it into a temp table and then merge from that.
Okay.
Okay. And there's advantages to that. You can roll back.
Yep.
You can recover, as I've just said, yeah. If you fail on that move, you can say, oh, sorry, just refresh and let the people point to the old database. That's when we're doing the moves. Right, and we'll talk about that later on. But that merge statement and using that into temp table really works well from an efficiency perspective.
Oh, perfect. Okay, good. Excellent.
Okay, so we've done that. Now we're going to add data to the shards.
Okay. So this was just moving reference data.
Just moving reference data.
Okay.
Okay, and you can do that at any time.
Right.
Okay. If it's a fresh new and it's the first time we're doing it, we actually go straight into the production table.
Right, okay.
Okay. There's an efficiency there. But if you update in the reference data, then we do the temp table staging and merge it and make it all sync, right? Okay. So when we add data to the shards, and I'm going to run this now because it actually takes a while, because the way we've done it for this demo is we insert rows one by one, one customer at a time. So we're creating sales orders right now.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go, yeah. Sales orders. Yeah, yep. No sales order in this high volume database, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go, yeah. We should start seeing some stuff, yeah. There. So look here. We've got 10 orders popping up.
Okay.
Here's the data at the bottom. You can see here that in actual fact, sales order ID 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 came to this database.
Okay.
But 11, 12,
but
we're
6 through 10.
Yeah, they're in a different database.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so which database are they in? There will be. There we go. This one's doing 16, 17.
20, so 21 through 50 went to another one.
Other shards, right?
Yep.
So we're distributing the load there by the customer ID. This is sales order ID, yeah? So this customer that this is associated to went to the targeted.
Right.
And what you can see is, let's see, I'll show you something here that's worth looking at. There's shard moves, we're going to get to that later. Where's my shardlet map?
Oh, shardlet map.
Can you see it? Oh, yes, yep, AW Sales Shardlet Map. So what this is telling you is that I've got 27 customers.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's 27 pages. Oh, no, I've got one more. Those are pages, right? I've got many customers, yeah? And each customer, that's their proper sharding key. They gave me a 1.
Right.
That's a sharding key. But the distribution key that enter, this is the pattern. It uses this, right?
Yep.
If you use this code, you don't worry about that too much. This is what you gave. It could have been customer John Doe. They've just used numbers here. That's what we got from the AdventureWorks.
Yep. Okay.
Okay.
And this is the range it went into.
That's the range. That number, deterministically, that number one there, that sharding key, is deterministically equivalent to that distribution key.
Right. Okay, perfect. Okay. All right, wonderful.
Wonderful. So this status, you'll see later when we move in data, what that means is that this shardlet, remember this is a shardlet. It's number one is a shardlet, right?
Yep.
He's active. He can receive connections.
Excellent.
So what happens is when you connect to the database to insert a row for that shardlet, he says, am I active? Yes, he's active. Okay. Let him go and pump this data. So you typically want to store this information in a cache.
Yep.
Right? And it gets persisted, and we persist it in table store.
Excellent. Okay, wonderful.
So this is either active or it's moving. Those are the two status that we have right
active
now.
And moving means we might be moving that shardlet to another shard.
That's exactly what it means. We're moving it to another shard. Not we're going to move it, or it's moving. So then we don't allow connections.
I was just going to say, so at that point, do you receive allow connections? No. So if it's in a moving,
connections.
No connections.
So so it's semi-online when you're doing this operation of splitting a shard.
Right.
Then what happens is people can still connect.
Yep.
But that shardlet who's busy moving can't connect. So all your others can connect.
Sure.
Right?
Okay. Wonderful.
Okay.
Good.
So he's still running in the background, I imagine. Different project. There we go, yeah. That other project, for what it's worth, is the source code, which again, we make completely available. It's a sample, right?
Yep.
It's completely, this demo is just demonstrating that what we've done here is we've packaged that source code into NuGet packages. You just do, I'll do that while this is running, actually. Manage there. Let's do that while this is running.
And you thought you had to wait till the end of the presentation to get this information, but we're going to look at it right now. Awesome.
So we're currently putting it on my Git, and it's, I should have actually gone, yeah. So what I wanted you to notice here is that their data elasticity client framework core, we're just dealing with naming conventions right now.
Right, okay.
Okay, but that's, this is NuGet. That's all that right. Implemented.
So if you want this available, it's available through NuGet, actually, right? Or MyGet.
It's a MyGet server,
right?
That I have locked down that you can't get to
right now.
unless we've had a discussion, right?
Right, exactly.
So yes, and we do make it available to some customers to be able to fiddle with, right?
Okay.
But we typically give them the entire source code.
Yeah.
This NuGet makes it just cleaner for the code. Like this is a much cleaner story,
okay,
right?
Good.
Okay. But I think that's done. Or is he still playing? He's still playing. And what you would normally do is you would do this in asynchronous fashion. You'd have a test load and it's running. All we're doing right now is one row after one row after one row, just adding the data. Okay.
Wonderful.
And that's why he's doing that. And I'll tell you, we normally need about 110 in these things, 70, 72. So this is still going to take a little while longer.
A couple of minutes. Yep.
But let me talk about adding some more stuff here, right?
Okay.
Is that what we do is we wrap the SQL connection.
Mm-hmm.
So we say execute SQL connection. So what that means is that if you are using something like Entity Framework, then you don't need all the reliable SQL connection because the latest Entity Framework's actually got that baked into it, right?
Oh, okay, good.
Okay.
Yep.
But if you're not using the Entity Framework and you're using straight ADO.NET, you can actually bring your reliable code into it as well.
Oh, really? Okay.
So reliable SQL connections, right?
Right.
So the things that we're working on at the moment is when you connect to do an insert, you connect to the shardlet.
Yep.
We do a lookup. Remember that shardlet map?
Yep.
We do a lookup.
Map.
Are you active? And we register that connection. So I wonder if you'll see it on this.
Oh, that's done.
Really?
Yep.
That's done. Okay. Well, you missed an exciting thing. What we do is track the connections.
Oh, okay.
We track the connections. So when a connection's made and record's done, that connection, we say the connection was made this time by this bid, it's got this bid. So then what happens is if we want to move, we only remove the connections that are associated to that shardlet.
Oh.
So that when we move, we just drop those connections.
Okay.
It's almost like a transient error kind of experience, right?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's done in the you store those in the Azure tables. So
in the Azure tables. And right. I was just going to point to that in a second. And it'll be empty now if I'm not mistaken. So let's just go, and shard synchronization, shardlet moves, shardlet map. And I think it's this one, there we go there. And it's going to be empty because we've got no connections there. Should remember to put that in. I just didn't do that. So sorry about that.
But trust us, it worked.
Okay. So in this test, so it's pretty simple, and I probably shouldn't have pushed that button there straight away, because what I wanted to demonstrate was that. What I wanted to demonstrate was that shard one has got 120 records in it. Mm-hmm. Okay. When I'm done with it, it's going to have 115 records in it.
Okay.
So where did the other records go?
Oh, so you're down. Yep. So you have 118 now.
No, that's everybody. 115 15? Header count, right?
Okay. Yep.
So where did the other records go? Now, trust me, it was 120 before they started. So where did they go? Actually, we saw 1, 2, 3, 4,
that's 5. That's true. We saw 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
And now you saw 11. Now, where's that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 gone, right?
Yeah.
So we say, okay, well, let's go and see where that went. And I know, because I pinned that record, I said I wanted to go to our MVP database. Okay? That's already done. Okay? It is already done. Boom.
So by going back to the code, so pinning means we're going to now move those.
So now pinning means that he's going to be in a specific shard. So that if I need to move shards because I've changed the range and stuff like that, I don't want to move that guy. So where am I going to put him? I can put him in any shard. It can be on this high volume one.
Yep.
It can be in a range shard as well.
Sure.
We're just pinning him.
So you could have moved him from shard one to shard five, for example.
We could have even kept him on shard one. We just pinned him. In our particular case, we just demonstrated that we can actually pin him and we can move him and pin him. In this test, we just demonstrated that. Okay. But you could actually pin him to the current. It's just this boring, right? Just pin him to the current. Yeah. You don't really see anything.
But it shows the flexibility we have.
Correct.
There, right? And pin means?
He stays on that shard. He doesn't move. Okay. So if you do this, I'm going to reduce my shards, increase my shards. If there's a pin in that, yes, you'll move all the other records.
Except that one.
Except that record. And that guy will stay there and your shard won't drop. So if you're trying to do, let's imagine you're doing this, and we're going to see it just now, we're going to increase the number of shards. Let's say we move it to 10 shards, right? And then I pin somebody at number 9, shard 9, right?
Yeah.
Then later on I say, oh, I want to reduce my shards to 3 shards, right?
Yep.
He'll reduce it, but he'll reduce the range shards to 3.
But he's still got that shard 9.
And that large 9 there. So you've actually still got 4 shards. Yeah. What you should do is take him and move him to a better place, right? Okay.
Yep.
So that's why it's better to move him to a shard that accepts pins, right?
Yeah. So maybe have a dedicated pin shard to say, we need this guy around, right?
Yeah. When we do that, it's an implementation detail, it's like operation detail, somebody. But the pattern allows you to pin him to any one of those, and the shard will not get dropped.
Excellent.
That's the point.
So pin data search means there's a specific set of customers that I can't get rid of. I need those around, so I'm going to pin those to a specific shard, and they're going to be around for...
I want
to
give them... I like it, this kind of story. You know, you've got the new SKUs?
Yep.
Okay, so you want to do sharding, okay? But now somebody says, I'm going to pay you extra dollars for you to give me GDR, like we've got that now in the new SKUs, right? I want you to give me more DTUs, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want you to give me a readable secondary. You say, okay, Mr. Customer. You know, I'm the business guy, and I've got a tenant and I'm going to take his data. I'm going to plug it onto that server, right?
Yeah.
Now that's when it becomes really useful from a sharding perspective. Not only do I do it for scale out, but I can start giving tier price structuring, right?
Yep. Perfect. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So at this point, we've got we've showed how to the reference data, how to insert data, but now we're really getting into the meat of elasticity, scaling, scaling up, scaling down, scaling out, back in. Right?
That's correct. So at this point, I wonder if it's worthwhile doing this. So what we're going to do is we now know, we currently have 5 shards.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to push it up to 8.
Okay.
Okay. What I want you to imagine is that if you're on a UI, you've just changed the number 5 to 8.
Yep.
And you've pushed the submit button.
Okay.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it. Because all of the other stuff is actually set up, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So behind the scenes, we're going to redo the shard map. We're going to take care of the moving the data, things like that. You're just, like you say, changing the number 5 to 8, click, okay.
So if I was an administrator, that's what I would do, right? Okay. So I'm going to run the test. What that means is we're going to go, we're going to go to shard creations table. We're going to see that we're going to queue up those records.
Okay. There's
first one's queued.
Yep. Second one's queued.
And the first one's in process already.
Wow. Okay. So, yep.
Okay. I've got three worker roles out there. They're working. I could have had five worker roles. I could have had records. But Sean, you went from 8 to 5. You went from 5 to 8. That's only 3 databases. So why are you queuing 8, right? It's a setting. What we're basically saying is that not only do we want to increase these, but we want you to resync the DDL.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We want you to resync the reference tables.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's a choice. You can choose to do that. So if you only want to do the three, you can do that. We've just configured it to do this kind of due diligence, keep everything going, you know, all those databases are intact. It does take longer to do that, right?
Okay.
Because what happens is SSD, well, it's finished. What happens with SSDT is what it does is it goes, the DAC pack comes along, compares the DDL there at the target to the DDL you have, checks out should I make any changes, and then replies the changes. Remember, our last three databases, there's nothing to compare against. Boom, 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 gets done.
Right.
The first five does all that comparison, and that's what takes the time.
Okay.
Okay. See the history, how we're keeping the history?
Wonderful. Okay, yeah, so this is, all right, so there's the five, then another, because we're just, okay, that makes sense.
Got it, eh?
Yep.
Very nice.
Beautiful.
So we can actually go to, and all that's happening there, the minute we created those shards, we created them, nobody can use them just yet. We've applied all the stuff, but nobody can use them just yet. Then you say publish the shard map. You're publishing the new shard map. So when we publish the new shard map, that's when new connections can use it. So what's happening in the background is this. Is removing shardlets, remember?
Yep.
We were getting errors. So there we go. So what's happening, if I can... Oh, we completed a whole bunch of them already. Ah! All the shardlets that needed to be moved have been completed already. Wow, that's pretty amazing. So what I was hoping to do, but I was talking too much as usual, right, is that...
Not a bad thing.
It went from an active... it went from... Where's my shardlet map? Maybe... Oh, yeah. In here, you would have seen active to moving.
Oh,
and then go back to active. And then you would have seen that fluctuation. In this year, you would have said, these are the shards. After you've readjusted all of that stuff, these shards from 1 had to go to 2, and these from 2 had to go to 3, and these from 3 had to go to 4. You know, these from shard 1 to 2.
To 3.
You have to rebalance that stuff, right?
Okay.
This is happening in the background, and it's per tenant. And because I've got 3 worker roles, I'm only doing 3 shardlets at a time, right?
So let me ask you a fairly dangerous question, potentially dangerous question. Okay. So you've got your shards 1 through 5, right? Does it create 8 new ones and then get rid of those 5, or does it just increase to 3?
Only 3.
Okay.
And what I wanted to highlight here is, even though these were moving, right?
Yep.
Is that before these even moved, the minute we published that shard map, this is before they moved, right? You publish a shard map. Now you start working out who should move, right? But any new shardlet that's coming, any new tenant that arrives, can immediately get the benefit of the new.
Yeah, because that shard map's published. I can start using those shards now.
All the reference data is propagated. Everything's happening. And that is a real win and a lesson that we learned from our previous attempts at creating a scale-out solution, is that even though we had published that those shards, that it took a long time before people could actually use the shards, right?
Yeah.
This pattern makes those shards immediately available to new connections.
This is perfect. Oh, so people are still working, right?
Yeah. And you get that release.
Yep.
You kind of, now, as much as you get the release, you've got to move data, right?
Yep.
So there are some resources that are moving. So you get this release, but that initially, you might not feel the release initially. What you're feeling is, but you're not necessarily feeling that overburden.
Right.
There you go.
But keep it also in mind that we're not going from 5 to 8 to 2 to 10 all the time, right?
Yep.
So.
Yep. Exactly, right? So, we just scaled up, right?
Yep,
now, truly, in our language before, and honestly, this is just a bad wording on my side here, is that I said scale up. But what we did was we scaled out. Okay? Yep. We haven't written code yet to demonstrate a scale up. It's pretty straightforward. What you do is you just say, alter your database to premium SKU, done, right?
Yep.
Premium database.
Yeah, so that scale up is going premium queue, scale out is, we're going from 5 to 8.
Yeah, so we're actually going out, and I should have called that
out. Let's go look at our 8 shards now.
Oh, just sure, we can do that. We can do that. So just remember 5 on that guy.
Yep.
And last time we had 115 on that other guy, remember?
Yep, okay, in number one.
So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go, this one doesn't change, he's pinned, right?
Yep, so we're still going to have five in the
He's still, because he doesn't get changed,
volume.
Right?
Yep.
So we're going to go, yeah. Let's go to one. Remember we said 115 was there. So we should theoretically have less, right? Because we distributed it.
70. Sweet, very nice.
Very sweet.
Right, so did it all for us. This is great. It's wonderful. All right.
Okay. So now this, you know, when I was working at customers and they were doing scale out, and I would always hear this word elastic. Oh, you can elastically do SQL Azure, right? And I just like, as a technologist or a technical person who's in the weeds all the time, I just go, that's not true. You can't be elastic. You know, that's just scaling out. Why do they do that?
Right.
You know, but the truth of the matter is we've now found a way to actually merge our data together. And it uses the same principles that we did for scale up.
Okay.
Remember what we did, right? We said this shardlet is active and then it's moving. And because the shardlet is a sharding key, it doesn't matter if I'm taking it to a place that's got records or a place that doesn't have records, because he's always unique.
And that was the challenge with kind of federation. You could scale out or scale out, you could not scale back.
Yep.
Because right now is the issue with kind of what's our key gonna be, right? Because if you now have multiple, you know, databases generating IDs, then all of a sudden you merge, you might have those collisions, things like that, right?
Exactly,
and so
right.
This solves that problem.
This solves that problem, right? And I haven't talked about how we achieve globally unique sequential numbers.
Right.
It's in this code, okay? Because AdventureWorks 2012 relies on sequence identity, okay? So we had to work out a way on how could we do this demo and achieve that so that people still get that non-trivial database experience, okay? So it's in the code, we just didn't do it today because we weren't gonna go to
that
detail.
Yeah, and what we'll do is we'll have you back another time. Yeah. We'll actually look at some of the code and, you know, just dive deeper into, you know, what really are we doing behind the scenes?
Yep, very good, very good. So now we're gonna scale down, right? So what are we doing with scale down?
We're gonna go from 8 to 3.
To 3. Mm. So one of the tests-
Making it interesting.
You're making it interesting. One of the things we did, one of the things we did in the past was actually pin a record to like shard 7 to demonstrate that that shard gets left out there. We're not doing that today.
Okay.
Because that high volume one has got the pin.
Yeah, so that's still going to be around.
That's still going to be
around.
Because
we pinned 1 through 5 there, right?
Just because we're going down to 3, it's not that we've only got 3 shards, it's 3 range shards. Okay. 3 shards that are participating in the range map.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So what does this mean for us? We are having to do a lot of moves. Okay, so we're gonna do some more moves here. Move it. And look
queued.
At that, okay. Queued. All those guys there are queued, okay? And it will increase as it's going. Because right now it's doing that little analysis. What is your distribution key? How does that map with the new range? And okay, you must go to the queue. We're gonna move you. Any new connections that'll come along, oh, we send you to, here's the trick, right? Here's a shardlet
connection?
No, because that one's shardlet map. Where are we now? We've picked up that the catalog, when you come in, you as a shard, as a shardlet, remember you came in with your distribution key?
Yep.
You belong there.
Okay.
Okay, that's where you belong, right? Okay. Up where you belong. Let's run it again. We're looking, everything's active. Nobody's moving, okay? We weren't able to pick up any that are moving because you've got 100 pages here and it's kind of like a race condition, right?
Right, and so the ones probably moving are probably pages 99 to 100 back
that
there.
Kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
That's what's happened here. But so let's go and have a look at how many databases we have. Did we go from 8 to 3, right? Okay. Right. Let's go and have a look here. And there we got it. We've got 3 databases. Okay, now the question is, well, Sean, all you did was you dropped the databases and you destroyed the data, right?
Right.
So we had 70, remember?
We had 70 when we had 8, you know, in shard
correct.
1.
Yep. Correct, so let's have a look.
What do we have now? Bam.
Bam.
So we basically reshuffled the data, put them right moved the data right into the correct shards,
yes,
as they say, and now we're ready to go. And that was actually pretty quick, right?
It is pretty quick, right? I mean, it's pretty quick. We have to look at the type of data and what we're doing in there. What I think is worth noting is how many of those connections did you see were inactive? Well, we didn't, right?
We didn't, yeah.
Which means that a whole bunch of shardlets, a whole bunch of tenants can actually connect while we're moving.
Yeah, new ones can come in because we're not moving, right?
Not only the new ones, the existing ones can still come in and talk to their old data because they're not busy moving.
Right.
Remember it's sustain active?
Yes.
Every time we ran it?
Oh, well, that's true, yeah. Okay. That's beauty. That's the beauty of
what we're doing, right?
We're doing here, yeah.
Because we're only moving the shardlet itself, the one shardlet at a time, right?
Yep.
We might do it in parallel. And because we've got three worker roles, we're doing three at a time, right?
Right.
We're in the configuration setting, we actually allow parallelism for each worker role. So you could even have multiple shardlets per worker role. You have that flexibility. You could scale out your worker roles.
Okay.
Or you can scale out the threads that each worker role does.
Okay. Great. So let's go back to the code just really quick.
Okay.
So, because moving forward, really what we would be doing, we wouldn't be doing any of these other things anymore, right? We would really be focusing on scaling up and scaling out and scaling in, right?
Well, I would say yes, but one has to talk about the fact that you will do DDL.
That's true. So if we, that's a good point. We may do alter table. We want to add a column to a table, right?
Yeah.
So we would have to do...
Possibly that,
right? Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good point. So this is fantastic, and we've been talking an hour, so let's kind of wrap this up, because we would love to have you back.
Okay, good.
And dive deeper into what's really going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But the purpose of this was really to say, here's a way to implement some patterns and practices for implementing sharding, elastic scale, in your environment.
That is correct, and that you can actually do it with cleanly into your solution.
Yep.
You know, I know that if you had to look at this code, which is, you know, making it completely available, you know, to, and it's not like this won't be made available, but you start looking at this code, you start going, oh man, that's just complex. I don't need that, you know, but it just covers a whole bunch and you can still make your solution actually look clean.
Clean, right. So really what you need is what we looked at before, right? Just kind of.
Yes,
those components, right?
Yeah, there it is.
So what people are going to be asking right now is, hey, when can I get my hands on on this information, on this stuff?
So, you know, like I said, we're just working with some, making sure that we got all the legal stuff together. We're making sure that you don't just get code and you don't get have some kind of documentation about the nuances and how it all comes together. So all of those things are just coming together. We're hoping to get that through by maybe mid-July, in the July timeframe.
So sometime in July, we'll make this available.
That's the spirit of it is, let's not just dump code out there for the date purpose. Let's make sure we can give some code if that's appropriate thing to do as a pattern and a sample.
Okay.
And then what does the supporting document help so we can give people's understanding and contribute to people's understanding.
Perfect.
And then some mechanism to get feedback so we can give it to the engineering team who are pursuing the productionalizing
of
a elastic scale solution on the Azure platform.
Right. Perfect. So what we're going to ask you is pay attention to our Twitter and blog accounts. So at SQL Scott.
At Sean BG.
We'll probably also be blogging about this, so pay attention to our blogs as well in July. But hopefully we'll get something out by then.
Yes.
And so just watch at SQL Scott, Sean BG, for some announcements around that when that stuff will be out. So Sean, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's good to have you. So
that was fun.
This is exciting. This is stuff that's been needed for a while. So thanks for coming in. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye.